Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. Today, we have as a returning guest, Trey Malicote. And Trey, if you don't remember, does hold his master's degree in counseling psychology. He does work as a personal coach, writer, and speaker on multiple topics. But I believe his true strength lies in his ability to give people the tools they need to step out of destructive patterns that they've been living so they can step into a greater life of joy. So what we're going to be talking about this morning is moving out of what is called a dysfunctional life. And sometimes we have a tendency to stay in those situations forever or certainly longer than is necessary. So Trey, we're going to start by welcoming you to the show.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
You're welcome. How do you begin to recognize a life that is truly dysfunctional?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I think when you really get right down to it, most people don't even begin to think about the idea that their life could be dysfunctional. But when you start looking at how happy are you? How much joy do you have in your life? How much peace do you live with every day? Is your life consumed more with fear or with possibility? That's how you begin to say, wait a minute, maybe I'm in some relationship or circumstance or just work environment, and that's dysfunctional to be in that pain. Does that make sense?
It does. I guess one of the keynotes to me is, I mean, maybe people are going to have more headaches, or maybe they're going to find that they have TMJ, you know, like they're clenching their jaws all the time, or maybe their blood pressure's up, or maybe they've developed an ulcer. Mm-hmm. So would those be some of the hallmarks that would come with, like, recognizing it's not just this feeling of joy, either having it or not having it, but man, I have some stuff going on in my life that's telling me something's wrong.
Recognizing the other signs, you're absolutely right. So you begin with this idea that am I as happy, as peaceful, as joyful, as hopeful as I possibly can be? Mm-hmm. And secondly, what is my body telling me right now about my current state? Let's dive into that just a little bit.
Okay, absolutely.
Earlier, when we were having dinner, I mentioned that in the midst of all of this stress in my life, even though I'm very grounded in the way I see the world and how I'm creating a reality, my body is responding with an ulcer because of stress and anxiety. And then you were talking about how that connects to our energy flow and what our... So maybe we could also say that if you're in flow with energy, if you're in health, you're not in dysfunction.
Right. Yeah. The way I've always looked at it is it's definitely a two-way street. So if energy coming into your body is being blocked, and you and I've talked about chakras before, but if it's being blocked at any of your chakra levels, and in the case of an ulcer, guess where that is?
Tell me.
It's your solar plexus. It's the thing that represents you and your life.
Drill it down, sister. Let me know what you're talking about.
So if you have an ulcer, then your solar plexus, which is represented by the color yellow, is actually jumping up and down and saying, you're not taking care of me. Yeah. And because you're not taking care of me, I tried to show you in gentle ways. Maybe I gave you a little indigestion. Maybe I kept you up at night because you ate some spicy food. But if you don't pay attention, then I'm going to give you an ulcer.
That's right.
And that's how I'm going to get you to look at what's going on.
Right.
So you would have to look very intimately at your own life and say, am I taking care of Trey?
Right. Absolutely.
And the answer would be?
Absolutely not at this point. I'm taking a hiatus.
Okay,
there you go. No, but yeah, I think... Anyway, go on. So
if you receive a physical symptom...
Mm-hmm. Headaches, stomach aches.
Like I said, high blood pressure, people that aren't sleeping well, mm-hmm. You know, maybe people that are having anxiety attacks,
sleeping too much,
mm-hmm. panic disorder jumps out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody who's going, you know what, I think I need that extra glass of wine tonight,
right?
You know, or I think I need to maybe smoke a little pot tonight. You know, there's nothing wrong with any of that
right.
done on an occasional basis.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it to cope, mm-hmm. then that's becoming an issue.
That's exactly right. Well, let me go out just on a slight tangent, because we're talking about recognizing the dysfunctional life,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're exactly right. You can look at the habits, you can look at behaviors, you can look at your relationships, you can look at how happy you are, you can look at what your body's saying to you. And if all those things are congruent, then they will all be working well.
Hopefully.
And if they're incongruent and you're in dysfunction, they're not going to work well. But here's my theory. Here's my little tangent.
Okay.
I think given the current state of social affairs right now, when you look at everything going in the U.S., abroad, with the economies, with politics, with corruption, people are living in a much more anxiety-provoking state right
Absolutely.
Now. There's an overlay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I contend, bringing it full circle to the topic today, I contend that when people have greater fear in society, greater anxiety in society, that exacerbates their own level of dysfunction in their homes. So if I extrapolate that out, right now relationships are more difficult to maintain,
mm-hmm.
or people are clinging desperately to each other.
Right.
Right? Work relationships might be more stressed and strained right now. Because everybody's worrying about, it's like this great big elephant in the room,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance the idea that we have just dysfunction in the world, and then we have dysfunction within us?
I don't know. How do you think that works? I mean, I have some theories on balancing it, but the way I would look at it is, how grounded are you? You know,
exactly.
Like, you know, looking at yourself, if you're not a very grounded individual and you have a tendency to be flighty,
mm-hmm.
you know, with your thoughts bouncing from here to there,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to be much more easily influenced
by
everything that's going on. And we have a social media that is bar none, hands down, looking for the worst case scenario because it gets them the greatest ratings.
Absolutely.
So, you know, whether you're Fox News, whether you're CNN, whether you're public broadcasting, whether you're ABC, and ABC is doing a fairly decent job of trying, I think, to stay neutral,
uh-huh.
but not as much as European.
Right.
If you do public broadcasting
ABC
or BBC News, you're getting a much better picture of world news.
Right.
But I used to laugh and tell people that our news, and this was 10 years ago, I would say something to them like, you know, our news is like the National Enquirer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much worse now.
And
so you have all of these very well-known announcers that are taking sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going no place, you know, as far as helping this person who may be somewhat dysfunctional ratchet up to the next level, because his anxiety, her anxiety is through the roof.
Well, and that's what I, you know, just kind of tying that back, that's what I think is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a heightened level of anxiety, a heightened level of powerlessness, a greater sense of depression. I think we're going to see substance abuse on the incline. We're going to see violence increasing.
We're already seeing that, right?
And so, in effect, what we're really talking about is how to have radical change, both personally and socially as well. And when you have that radical change personally, it leads to social change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It does.
So, Reckon, sorry, I hijacked your agenda for a moment there, but...
Well, but it's all very accurate. It all works together, you know, because it's like your hand in a glove.
Mm-hmm.
So the hand might be the individual.
Mm-hmm.
The glove is everything societally around mm-hmm. the individual.
Right.
And you can't get away.
I mean,
unless you go live in some sort of cave mm-hmm. or out in the middle of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and there are people that are choosing to do that. We have this whole, I imagine, you know, some of the listeners are aware of this movement that's called When the Shit Hits the Fan, and that movement has, you know, getaway bags ready to go in the closet,
right.
and make sure that you have plenty of preparations that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that type of thinking, although it's good on the one hand to know how to take care of yourself if need be,
mm-hmm.
and I've learned some things by reading, you know,
right.
what they're doing. But on the other hand, it has so much to do with the increasing anxiety.
Absolutely.
And so then again, going back to the person that is in a somewhat maybe dysfunctional life
mm-hmm.
style,
mm-hmm.
that only aggravates the situation.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
See. Yeah.
So, okay, so how do people then cope with this? They kind of look in the mirror one day and they go, my life isn't going in the direction I want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling joyful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling maybe calm and satisfied with who I am and what I'm all about.
Mm-hmm.
What next?
Well, I think it begins with a question, really a hard-hitting look at who you see yourself as, who you are. You take a 5-minute journey or a 30-minute journey or an hour into the question, am I peaceful?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have peace right now?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a big concept because people think that peace means it's all quiet. Peace is mm-hmm. not about life being quiet. Peace is about being quiet in the noise of life. So that's
mm-hmm.
the first place you start. You say,
mm-hmm.
am I peaceful?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, yeah, absolutely great, keep doing what you're doing. If you say, no, I don't feel peaceful in my relationship or in my work or in my finances or in my friendships or with my children or wherever it may be, if I don't feel peaceful, I then have to make one radical decision. You know what that is?
What's that?
To take full and total responsibility.
And most people are never going to want to.
They don't want to do
it. No,
no.
Because, I mean, how many times as a therapist, you've heard this, I have heard this, well, if my mom or my dad or my teacher or my wife, but it's somebody else that they're projecting.
Uh-huh. It's all predicated on the yeah. behavior of someone else.
Right, right,
right.
So if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't do this.
That's exactly right.
Without looking again and, you know, you've done this, I'm sure, but I always tell people if you're pointing at somebody verbally, to look at your pointer finger. Because you always have three coming back.
Right back.
And so, you know, if people would stop and kind of recognize that when we say we don't like something about somebody else or something else, what is their responsibility in that?
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think people have a struggle with responsibility, not because we're weak.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because people don't want to take responsibility. It's... innately, I think people know that if you take total, profound responsibility for everything in your life, that includes creating the life you want.
And that is an enormous responsibility.
Enormous. Because you know why that? I'm going out on a rant.
Mm-hmm.
From the point of young childhood, we have creativity beaten out of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're told to not be expressive, not be explosive, be just like all the other puppies in the field.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught that. We're indoctrinated that. But that's not who we are as divine a divine essence. That's not who we are.
Right.
So we face this idea of taking responsibility and we say, oh my God, I can't do that because I'm terrified because I don't know how to create anymore. So part of this journey of stepping out of dysfunction is stepping into creation.
And you're going to have people that will come back immediately and go, it's kind of like cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I either don't like to cook or I don't know how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you say to them, you know, like you're going to be creating your future,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be like deer in the headlights.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know the recipe
mm-hmm.
to create my future. How many cups of this do I need? And how many teaspoons of this
uh-huh.
do I need? And so rather than go into the kitchen and begin to create and just try and see where it leads, they stop. They don't even walk in to the kitchen.
Uh-huh. You know, I think largely in part, they don't walk into the kitchen, number one, because there's great fear in creating the life you deserve.
Uh-huh.
There is fear there. But it's also because there's comfort in complacency.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's okay to be just delightfully stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I think people think it's okay to be stuck.
Well, I mean, I'll use as an example again, somebody who is overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they know they'd be healthier if
mm-hmm.
they lost 100 pounds, 50 pounds, 20 pounds, 10 pounds, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They know they would be better off. Their heart would thank them. Their knees would thank them. Their hips would thank them.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, that piece of apple pie looks awfully good.
Mm-hmm.
And ice cream on the top, oh, that's my favorite.
Right.
And so, or gee, that French bread was really yummy. One more piece isn't going to hurt that
hungry.
Much.
You're making me hungry.
But, it, you know, it's that discipline to say no to yourself
mm-hmm.
and yes to something that's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
So complacency is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do anything. Whereas if I change, I have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to do something, what if it's the wrong thing?
Right. You know what I get the biggest kick out of? We fight change with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying people would much rather muck around in their complacency than to create and to... But here's the crazy myth.
Well, you know your own dirt, though.
Right, right.
So if I go play in somebody else's sandbox, I might not like what is there.
That's exactly right. Your own dirt's always much more pleasant. That's kind of funny. Oh, my gosh. Now you made the train go off the track. Anyway, I think that people don't have models. I don't think that's what I was going to say, but to get into this state of creative flow, you got to realize, here's the big secret. Here it is. It just came back. Here's the big secret. We are always changing.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a constant state of change.
Right.
But as humans, we actually have convinced ourselves that we have a fixed reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, we do. I mean, and you and I talked about that earlier, but, you know, a baby doesn't actually say to himself, I have until 12 months to learn how to walk.
Right.
And they just kind of do it. It's a gradual process.
Yeah.
But we, as adults, look at, you know, maybe it's a high school diploma, maybe it's a GED,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's, you know, going for junior college, maybe it's a four-year program, a graduate school, a PhD, an MD, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a journey to that destination.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that that's your final destination.
That's right.
Your final destination is when your life ends.
That's
so
right.
What do you want to do during that period of time?
Uh-huh. It's living the dash. And what I think is interesting is that people don't live the dash. They live the expectations of how they think their life is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based on what someone else told them.
And they bought.
And they bought it.
Yeah.
You know, like we were talking about earlier, how much and how strong our parental or the person or people that raise us,
mm-hmm.
the strong influence, and what they're really teaching us is their own fears, their own ways of keeping themselves safe in the world, their own limiting thoughts, their own self-sabotaging beliefs. We learn the junk,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And then we decide we want to step out of that, and we only know junk.
For the most part, that's very true. And right? And it doesn't make any difference in my mind whether it's maybe your religious upbringing and whatever doctrines those taught that were limiting, or if it's doctrines that came, you know, from political upbringings. I mean, we have very strong Republican families, very strong Democratic families, and everything in between. But, I mean, it's whatever kind of trips your trigger.
Right.
And if you walk out of that kind of family with very strong upbringing in their own, I mean, like generational, sometimes it's, you know, great-grandparents who taught grandparents who taught parents, and you knew all of those people, and they all live the same limitation.
The same limiting story.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, okay, let me drill that a little bit then, take it a little bit on a slightly different journey, because we're talking about this idea of dysfunction and how to recognize it and how to step out of it and what's it really mean. And you're sniffing around at something that I think is pivotal to that idea. When we think about the people that we are indoctrinated, grown, raised by, taught by, nurtured by, we're learning their own fears, their own sense of safety in the world, their own limitations. But there comes a point where we begin to believe those things to be our truth. And that's where this fixed reality comes in. So you think about sex, politics, relationships, religion, spirituality, education, government,
health,
guns, all of that. We have fixed beliefs about each one of those things.
Right.
Right?
We do.
And when you look at the dysfunction in a person's life, what I've found, I'd love your insight on this, you can always look for patterns of compensation. So is somebody overcompensating for a limitation that they see in their lives, which is really a story they're holding, right? You can look at addiction behaviors, how they're coping just with the anxiety and the stress and all the struggle of that, you know, and think about how many people we see today that are on anti-anxiety and antidepressants. They almost, everybody is. You look at relational patterns. Do they live lightly in the world? Are they connected deeply to people? Are they disenfranchised? You know, all those different things. So in looking at dysfunction and stepping out of it, it's about taking a real hard, cold, bold look at what's really going on. What's really going on, right? And then deciding whether or not you deserve it.
Well, okay, let's look at the first part. Taking a close look at what's going on. And for the most part, you would be an exception. I would probably be an exception. I think there are some individuals that do a lot of what we do, which is pry back the covers and look underneath.
Peel the onion.
And and just look at what really is happening in the world. But most people, I would say, live a life where they simply go from day to day doing the best they can and really not looking very carefully at anything that's going on around them. They react to things, but they don't look, they don't examine, they don't reflect, they don't try to disseminate, you know, what is happening. It's easier to just go with the ABC News, go with the NBC News, go with Fox, go with whatever thoughts are currently out there that they somewhat align themselves to. And they're aligning themselves based on either familial or educational mindsets.
So all those lessons they've
learned. Those lessons. And so the comfort is not in looking at things and examining them, because they stopped doing that a long time ago. They simply are living out the life that they were taught by someone. And it could be an educator, it could be a family member, it could be a best friend.
Okay.
But it's somebody that influenced them to say, this is the path, rather than discovering their own path. And some of the individuals that I've worked with, and I'm sure you've worked with, it's helping them believe in themselves. What is your path? What is, where do you want to go? Not where somebody else wants to go.
No, absolutely. I mean, because ultimately, we only have one, we're circling this sun one time, right? Well, that we know.
That we're aware of.
That we're aware of. Mm-hmm. And then who knows, you know, that'll be a fun show at some point to talk about that. And, you know, I think it comes to a point where you say, I can change that. I don't have to live like that. I can make a different decision.
Right. And it is a decision tree.
Yeah.
Quite literally. So if the decision is, do I get up and go to work? You know, that might be one branch of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But another branch of the tree is, do I get up and go to work at that job?
Right.
And so, or do I get up and make the decision that I'm calling a school today to go learn a different skill?
Right.
So that I can have a job that will make me joyful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's different little branches that we can walk down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who just says, I'm going to go to a different job, if they don't actually know what their strengths are and what makes them happy,
they're just shifting bad for bad, maybe.
Right. It could be. And how many times do you see that in relationships where they've been in one dysfunctional relationship and they go, I'm not done. I'm not doing that anymore. And then within 6 months, they're back in a relationship with somebody that's almost identical.
Oh my God.
Everybody else can see it,
mm-hmm.
but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is they never stop to say, what was it that made me unhappy in that mm-hmm. relationship? And I think in so many cases, and maybe this has happened when you've worked with somebody, but in so many cases, they got back into a similar relationship with a belief system that said, it will be different this time.
Mm-hmm.
I can heal this person.
Yeah.
I can make them happy. And it's just playing out exactly the same
way. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when you look at the repeated patterns, think about the hundreds of clients you've had where you, I'll give you an example. I've got a woman that I'm working with right now. She has had 5 partners. Every one of these men have been high narcissists of varying degrees, you know. And by the way, I don't look at a narcissist as a bad thing. I think they're just wounded, scared little birds,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But she's got this pattern. And the other night we were chatting and I said, when are you going to see that that is what you think you deserve?
What was her response?
Whoa. You know, I mean, that's confrontive.
Right.
What you're tolerating is what you think you deserve.
Right.
There's power in that statement.
Right.
Right? And you see so many people say, I want to break out of it. I don't want to have the same pattern. I don't even think they know that they don't have joy or happiness. They just don't want the same old crappy pattern,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What type of courage does it take? Let me rephrase. What type of courage has it taken you to step completely out of who you were? Because that's really what we're asking people
mm-hmm,
to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, step out of a dysfunctional existence, what's it take? What has it taken you to do that?
You know, I remember actually doing it, and it's been a long time now, and I'm evolving. So,
mm-hmm.
but when I moved away from St. Louis, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
where I had a private practice, and I moved to the Chicago area because
mm-hmm.
I was getting ready to remarry. And so I literally had to recreate me. Everything that I knew from graduate school, all my friends,
mm-hmm.
all my support team, a beautiful home, I was leaving all of it behind
mm-hmm.
and moving into a small apartment. I remember when the moving van showed up and most of my stuff went to storage.
Uh-huh.
And I had 7 wardrobes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 7. And I'm not kidding. And I sat there thinking, what have I done?
Uh-huh.
I can't even fit 2 of these into the closet that is in this apartment.
Right.
What have I done? But when you recreate who you are, when you reimagine yourself, it's kind of fun. It's a little bit like going into, you know, a new home
mm-hmm.
and making the decision of what colors you want and maybe what arrangements you want with furniture. And maybe you have some pieces from your past,
mm-hmm.
but others you've replaced. And so that's what you're doing, you know, in recreating this life. And you're not saying goodbye to who you are necessarily, but you're bringing that person with you. I have somebody I'm working with at the moment, and I had this person imagine that the child, you know, that was back in the past that mm-hmm. was so injured was now with him or her, and that this person then took the child's hand mm-hmm. and walked with the child.
That's beautiful.
So the child did not feel abandoned anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there was going to be, it's a meditational exercise that mm-hmm. I do, but there's a lake at the very end,
mm-hmm.
and they actually, there's a gift for the person in the lake.
Oh, right on.
But in this particular case, I wanted the child to reach in and give the gift to the adult.
Right.
Very symbolically, like, this is me and I'm giving you my gift.
Mm-hmm.
And as the adult would open the box or whatever the gift was in, could mm-hmm. be seaweed, but as they opened it, they had to acknowledge what it is and why that gift is in their life right now.
Wow.
And then to walk with the child back out from the meditational part.
So that's actually a journey of reconciling to the past, the
right.
significance and
right.
the beauty of the past.
Right, because we never leave that behind.
No.
You know, we are who we are because of our past.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to continue to be that person in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're talking about stepping out of dysfunctionality.
Absolutely.
Is you don't leave your past behind ever, because if you did, there would be huge voids. And you can't fill those voids.
Uh-huh.
It's the values that you bring with you. But
right.
maybe those values will be tweaked. Maybe they will be reexamined as to how valuable they really are.
I think, you know, when I work with people in my process of journeying, it's about looking at the stories of the past, the stories of judgment and condition
mm-hmm.
and expectation and limitation. And once you can go back and see that,
mm-hmm.
then you can ask the question, why do I believe that? How's that serving me? How's it playing out in dysfunctional experiences in my life? How's it making me unhappy? And once a person understands the impact of those stories, they then can step into a place where they say, okay, I don't have to believe that anymore.
I agree up to a point. I think one of the most important things in moving out of a dysfunctional life
mm-hmm.
is we need to not be blaming ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, for living that. But a lot of times when people are leaving behind the dysfunction, like I said, there's these voids,
mm-hmm.
there's spaces. What am I going to put in those spaces? And so if you can help the person who is moving out of the dysfunction recognize that there was beauty
in
who they were.
They, yeah.
And fill those holes with the remembered beauty, because instead, they're only remembering, you know, all of the tragedies, all of the guilt, the blame, the things like
right.
that. So if they can look back and say, you know what, that was an amazing thing my mom did. Every Sunday,
yeah.
she did this. Or every weekend, my brothers and I had time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the this is,
right.
you know, then the ability to plug that in so that they feel whole
uh-huh.
as they're moving forward. So they're not feeling like damaged goods.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you know, when I look at the past, I think that, and I don't think you and I differ on this too much, but I think that for us to, we can glean from the past and hold to the things that give us joy. But I also think that when we look to our past and see it as a reference point, that's about the equivalent of an iPhone 8
mm-hmm.
looking back at an iPhone 2
right.
and being critical of it.
Right.
We are evolving every single day.
Right.
And so to move out, I think to move out of dysfunction, you have to now I take a hard stance on this. I say your past has no relevance whatsoever. I know you come in on that a little differently.
Yes, I do.
But if you can get rid of this idea that you are who you were.
You're evolving, though.
Yeah, you've evolved beyond who you were.
Right. So, I mean, we always take a little bit with us. We might take, you know, I mean, as symbolic again as the color of your hair, it evolves. You know, you might have been a towhead when you were born.
Yeah.
And I was very dark red.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sort of, I don't know, salt and pepper, blonde, something like that. People don't look at me anymore and say, oh, you're a redhead.
Right.
And yet I am. You know, I'm still a redhead, but I'm just not that dark auburn color.
Uh-huh.
Am I the same person that I was even yesterday? No.
Uh-huh.
Am I the same person I was as a little girl at five? No. But I have that same name. I have the same eyes. I have the same hair. You know, I'm always going to be a part of who I was. And hopefully you take the best parts.
Hmm. That's interesting. Because I really don't reference who I've been.
Not even as a little boy, huh?
Mm-mm. No, I mean, on occasion I might, but it's not. I try to wake up every day and say, create.
I'm going to be a therapist here for a second.
Okay.
I would wager to say that the little boy that is a part of you is pretty angry because he hasn't been recognized.
No, you know what? I did a deep, deep exploration with that little dude.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I laid out eight photos of myself in sequence from birth to 8 years old, and I noticed that between 5 and 6 years old, there was a dramatic departure in the affect of that child.
Okay.
And so I spent an entire year going back and reclaiming that kid.
Okay.
And, you know, in part of the process of that, it was really powerful to go back and to embrace that child. To say,
where's that child today, though? Because you're saying that you're not your past and he's still there.
I ask, why do we have to believe that? I think we heal the little release the little.
Yeah, we're not talking. We're not talking the same language at this moment, I don't think, because he is still you, DNA wise. He is still you. You cannot deny his.
No,
part
but
of
I
it.
See that as he's just a. He was a former a version of me.
He's the evolutionary part of you. You were, at one point, under a year. And then you were 2, and then you were 3.
Yeah.
And this is all an evolutionary process.
Yeah.
So he's still with you.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that his pain is no longer maybe with you.
That's the key. I don't reference, I don't look at, I mean, okay, I get what you're saying. Because I laugh and smile and am playful like that little dude was.
Right, right.
Yeah,
you
okay,
get
I get
part.
You.
You get the best parts of him.
Right.
And then the part
But he
that
doesn't
was,
drive the bus.
No.
Not at all.
No.
And that's a lot of time. I'm sorry, I'm getting grovelly. Going back to that wound thing, how many times have we seen someone who's driving their life through the lens of a 10-year-old?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right?
And that's the little part that they recognize, and like the person that I said was taking the child and going down the path.
Yeah.
In this case, they needed to do that in order to let that child know that she was not abandoned or
absolutely.
He was not
abandoned.
Absolutely.
That's healing that core wound.
Yeah, it's healing it. And so, you know, you hug, you play, you do those things to just let that little person know that they unfortunately weren't valued then, but that you
they
value
are now.
Them now.
Bravo.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. So.
Yeah.
So stepping into a place of health is recognizing that those wounds don't play a role anymore.
Right.
That young, that little within you does not have to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Probably doesn't want to.
It doesn't want to because it's not as good a version.
Right.
And that you step into a place of creating that sense of peace in your world the way you want it.
Right.
Every single moment.
Right.
Huh.
So, if you had to look at the reasons, I mean, that we kind of have talked about, you know, people waking up one morning and saying, I really don't want to keep walking down the same road because it doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they've recognized the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of see that it's not in their best benefit,
right.
You know, to keep going there. But what would be the reason? I mean, in your mind and in, maybe in my mind, what is the reason that people continue? They just stay in that rut.
In the misery.
Right. And I know that, you know, one of the things in terms of just brain function is that we have neurosynapses that are making paths constantly. And as long as they make that connection, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper.
Absolutely.
So my thinking on it is that if you've stayed in a dysfunctional mindset for many, many, many years, that rut is pretty deep.
Deep.
And so now you're going to need a ladder.
Absolutely.
And they don't know where to find the ladder. Lowell's and Home Depot they don't have the right ladder for you to get out. So why don't you go there with some
Well, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about the rut, because I think that humans are actually far more simple than we think. We are neurochemical creatures. Everything. Our depression is neurochemical. Our addiction is neurochemical. And I'm not talking about disease. I'm saying we are operating on a balance or an imbalance at any given time.
Right. I mean, sex is neurochemical.
Absolutely.
Happiness is.
Absolutely. Jumping off a bridge is neurochemical.
Yeah, don't let me do that.
I hear you. So when you look at that, if somebody's changing, stepping out of a pattern of dysfunction, you have to interrupt the entire system. For instance, you can't make a radical change in your life without making a shift in your diet.
Right.
Or your level of exercise. Or how you're communicating. You got to take a step out of the rut in multiple ways. And if you can begin to take steps out of the rut that have a neurochemical impact. For instance, if you want to step out of dysfunction, just start eating one meal a day better than the rest of the junky meals you've been eating. Or drink just half a bottle of wine less. Right? Or, and you know, I've talked to, on a personal level, well, I won't even go there, but you got to shift it in some way, neurochemically.
Right, right.
Then it'll flow. Right?
Right. And, you know, one of the very first radio shows that I did, at the very beginning, I was probably in early October, but I talked about the chakras and talked about the fact that we have endocrine organs in every one of our chakras. So if you don't eat properly and feed the endocrine organs properly, there's dysfunction there. So if our energy is part of who we are, if we're nothing more than vibrational frequencies in flesh, then by changing up the diet, by changing up sleep patterns, by changing up exercise and activity, we allow for those two-way streets to work. So now the energy can flow down from divinity and up. And for most people that are in this helter-skelter life of stress, stress on the highway and stress, stress at work, and then I go home to stress and the schools and everything else, if they don't know how to get themselves into some sort of balance, then the two-way highway,
it's not ever gonna
is like highway 19. You know, it's, I mean, this morning I was on it about 8:30 and I was doing 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So step one, interrupt the system. Step two, make one shift in how you see your ability to create in the moment. Make one shift. Every time you have something that's confronting to an idea or a thought or a belief that you have, simply just call the question, right? Now, you, I'm sorry, I hijacked that for a second. The question was, really,
What's the reason people won't change?
Okay, yeah. So I think it is all of that. I think the other reason that people don't change or don't want to change is that they're so distracted right now. For instance, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat, whatever.
Messenger.
All of those, anything that we see in social media or on the internet that gives us an instantaneous response, a like, a comment, a happy face, that's giving us a tiny little neurochemical drip into our brain, right? Mm-hmm. So we're getting little doses of dopamine every single time we look at something distracting.
Mm-hmm.
We're becoming so chemically addicted to our media
yeah.
that we're being controlled by it. So going back to what I was saying earlier, if you want to step into a different place, you've also got to shift out of those systems that are really messing with your neurochemical structure.
But for so many people, that is quite literally their life. How many times have you driven
Absolutely.
Even down 19 today? There were people that were on their phones.
Yep.
And it scares me to death.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I did some traveling in June mm-hmm. with another friend. And we were in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's right.
And we were at B.B. King's mm-hmm. with live entertainment. And how many people walked in looking at their phones, sat down, mm-hmm. and began to eat looking at their phones?
At their phones, no conversation. So I contend that people are distracted for two reasons. They're distracted because of pervasive fear, like we were talking about mm-hmm. in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They're also distracted because they feel their suffering and don't want to address it.
Yeah.
And they're distracted because it's purely neurochemical. If you put your phone down and stop dealing with Facebook, you will have a withdrawal process just mm-hmm. like a bulimic who stops vomiting, or a runner who stops running, or an alcoholic who stops drinking.
So it won't be long before our DSM codebook has addictions to phones.
Absolutely.
It'll be one of the newer addictions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then all the little, you know, we're going to have a porn clarifier, a distractor of this. It's going to be insane. That's the emerging diagnosis.
And you know what's sad is that's not going to go away.
No.
That is how we communicate today. We don't write beautiful mm-hmm. letters.
Right.
We don't even make very long phone calls anymore.
Right.
We text. And our text, for the most part, are, you know, abbreviations. Mm-hmm. And the real danger that I see, because I've experienced it, is when you text somebody, even when you talk to them on the phone, it can be a problem. But when you text, you don't get the inference.
No.
You tend to rapidly scan whatever was said,
mm-hmm.
and you draw your own conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And probably 90% of the time, it's an inaccurate conclusion.
Yeah.
So I'm personally concerned about a whole generation that's coming up with nothing more. I saw a little 3-year-old the other day. She was drop dead gorgeous little girl.
Uh-huh.
And she was on her own little iPad, just playing games and not talking to her mom, playing games.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, people are not going to know in another 50 years how to spell. We don't know cursive now.
Right.
It's not being taught in the schools, but how to spell, how to write, how to communicate, how to read.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you read with these little short
right.
words that are not even spelled correctly,
mm-hmm.
then books will become a thing of the past.
I know. You know, it's easy to look at that and be frightened about it. But, you know, a friend of mine the other day said, maybe we're evolving to a different form of communication. But, nevertheless, that could be a whole nother show. If you think about how distracted people are,
mm-hmm.
people are either running to something or running from something.
Right. And how often do they run to? Because, I mean, running to something to me has more of a positive connotation.
Absolutely.
So if I'm running towards something fun, I might be, I mean, in a figurative way, I might be running to a golf course
mm-hmm.
or running to have lunch or dinner with somebody
mm-hmm.
or running to the bedroom. I don't know, you
know
right. what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, things that would be positive. I wonder percentage-wise if there's more that run to or run away from.
I think that, and I hate to sound cynical, but I think there's a very small percentage of people who run toward the life they want.
Right. I'm afraid that's true.
Yeah. Now, I think there's beauty and you know, I'm grateful to be on your show today because I think there's beauty in the opportunity to tell people, you know what, if you have a story of oppression in your life, a bad traumatizing experience, something that's been tragic and difficult, and if you feel like you've been kicked in the teeth, you're evolving and you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And in the process of shifting, let go of the stories, the limiting beliefs, the ideas that keep you oppressed, the things that you have been taught that make you feel small and insignificant and stupid and worthless and worth, you know, just give it up. Just say, that's not going to be my story any longer.
Right.
I refuse.
Right.
Right. And then to step boldly in a place where you actually realize that you're the only human being responsible for creating your journey. Not your mother, not your father, not your brother, sister, spouse, partner. You get to create it.
Right.
And then create. Paint. Paint your life with the colors and the brush you want.
Now, they may need an instructor. And so I'm going to ask you, as, you know, your own little advertising here.
Yeah.
But as an instructor that is willing to take them by the hand,
mm-hmm.
and to walk with them while they learn to paint, or
right.
they learn to write music, or they learn to write their next best novel, you know, you are going to be their instructor, college instructor, whatever you
right.
want to be, showing them how, because the majority of people don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
They really and truly don't. And they would be looking at somebody who said, go create, as, like I said, not even walking in the kitchen.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't have the recipe for that, therefore I'm going to stay put.
Right.
How can they find you?
Well, I have a website called upsizeyoursoul.com, and that's probably the best place. And, you know, if I work with someone, it's really a four-step process. First thing we do, and it's either a short time-limited period or it's over a longer period.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do it like a four-day deep dive where I hold your head under the water and we're going to go to a very deep and profound healing place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about recognizing where your stories have come from, all those limiting beliefs, looking at the impact of those stories and how they've influenced your life, looking at where your life is today, present moment, and what you want changed, and creating and dreaming and visioning and exploring the life that you really deserve. And when I work with someone, it is side by side, intense, good, deep conversations. We might spend over a 4-day period, 70 hours together. But I know that out of that process, my goal is not to show people, it's only to show it's not even a show. I want to walk with someone to journey toward peace, joy, and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there to be the expert.
Can they get there in a shorter period of time? I mean, like 4 days is very short. When I think of our lives as birth to death and however long that
mm-hmm.
is as an evolving situation...
Right.
Do they come back and maybe have refresher?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, usually it starts with up to 4 days where we really get into the muck and mire and look
mm-hmm.
at the impact of
mm-hmm.
the stories. And then the second piece of it is really practicing it's a practice of mindfulness.
Right.
It's being in the mindful moment, creating
right.
real time.
Learning how to be present.
Totally. And that's really the second phase. How
mm-hmm.
do you live in the mindful moment? And I teach a lot of things about music and essential oils and breathing and how to just stay grounded in a world that's going to throw you about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the third piece is a person stepping into a place where they say, I am an infinite being and I have infinite possibility. And then that begins the process where I work with someone to say, okay, let's vision for your life so much bigger than you can even begin to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets really fun.
How many people at that moment go, oh my gosh, you know, like...
Like the big aha.
Yeah, the big aha, and am I ready to take that step?
You know, typically they're not afraid of it by
at
the time
point,
we get to that
yeah.
point. But like my friend Michael in Denver said, he'd taken a 2-week journey after the 4 days we had spent together. And he called me the day that he walked back into his condo and he said, I just walked in and I don't live here anymore. And I said, I guess it's time to redecorate.
Yes.
And he started and he moved to the East Coast, bought a beautiful Victorian home. He went from being really a fairly unhappy human being to being a person who's creating a beautiful life for himself.
And he's excited every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and what a beautiful place you know, to be in your life, to wake up and go, I love me. I love who I'm living with.
Absolutely.
Because you live with yourself every single day.
If you don't like you, you might as well just stop. That's a problem, right?
Oh, that's very, very true. So how did they get hold of you? I know you're going to be in New York for about 6 months.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm going to be with at the Omega Institute and be working up there with some wonderful folks. So upsizeyoursoul.com is the best way to download free resources. There are 6 journaling guides on there. And, well, you help produce those. You were instrumental in that. Each one could be a journey of profound depth.
Absolutely.
Just one of them, you know. And if someone wants to call or Facebook me, or, I mean, I'm really pretty open because I feel like if I'm here on the face of the earth to connect in a divine way with others, then I'm going to make myself available to others, you know. So just email or through the website mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes a lot of sense to
me.
Yeah.
We covered a lot of ground, sister.
We did. I guess I want to kind of conclude in the few minutes that we have left, just the understanding that who we are in this world. You know, like one of the things that Tess, the angel communicator that I've had on before, one of the things that she says is that we don't recognize that we are a miracle. I mean, our birth was a miracle.
Sure.
That we became something that could live outside our mother's womb and has grown into whoever we are today. So
absolutely.
We just don't recognize that. So if we could begin with a final thought on the fact that we were conceived in love, most of us at least were probably conceived in that respect. And even if we weren't, the fact that we were conceived and born and are alive today, that our whole purpose might be just learning how to love ourselves and learning how to love others.
I think that you're hitting the nail right on the head. I think that we are all conceived in love, not because of the other humans involved in the process, but because we're a divine expression of pure love.
Right.
We're conceived into it.
Right.
It is infused inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And to come to a point of profound realization that, number one, we are not mistakes. We are not flawed. We are perfecting every single day. And that we're a perfect, beautiful expression of something we cannot understand, but we know is beautiful.
Right.
And perfect. And I happen to believe that that is our journey to understand divinity and to step fully into unconditional love for ourselves.
Right. I agree. I think one of the things that hit me, you know, a little over a year ago was my husband was in a nursing home and then eventually in hospice, and watching so many people who were going through those final stages with their family of life, and seeing that in the majority, I don't think I saw a single family that was going through a really difficult, tragic departure. You know, that it seemed like, and maybe it's hospice, you know, and
that's
the way they do
thing.
Things. But the transition between being alive and being deceased is so gentle. And I happen to think myself that it's because we have that recognition in the final moments of our earthly life that we are nothing more than divine love.
Divine love, a soulful spiritual energy that comes in many different forms.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Trey, I want to thank you immensely for being on the show again.
Absolutely.
I know that we're going to have you on future shows as well. And we'll stay in touch while you're out in New York.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
You are welcome. And for anybody listening to the show, if you feel that this is one that maybe family members, loved ones, best friends, whatever need to listen to, please go to synergyconnectionradio.com. Again, that's synergyconnectionradio.com. The shows are archived there. There are show notes that will give you a little bit of a synopsis of what the show was all about. And then the hour-long program will be up and running usually by the afternoon of the show date. So I hope everybody has a beautiful remainder of your week. And let's make this your best life. Thank you.